Blog Talk Radio.
Genesis chapter 7. And if you don't mind, if you don't feel like reading, don't read. Okay? But as you can tell, I'm having problems talking. So if we would just go around and each of us read a verse of Genesis chapter 7, and then we'll discuss it. Starting with my lovely wife, Carol. Hey, everyone take a verse. I don't want to wear anybody out. Comments. All right. Well, let's look at the. We got a book that we're going along with this, and I don't think I have any route. So we're going to read over this a little bit, then we're going to go to this handout. It's pretty straightforward what Skip is saying in here. Like he says, a summons to salvation on page 63. God gave Noah a beautiful invitation, come to the ark. It's the first appearance of the word come in the Bible. There are several invitations like this throughout the scriptures, Isaiah 1:18, Matthew 11:28, Revelation 22:17. And they're all referring to God inviting us to come. Come for salvation, to come for hope and strength, and to walk with Him. So, and this is the first time this word is used. And God is, well, like I said, there's about 1 billion people on the earth. So, it was not a small thing for God to do. Simple as that. Look at page 64. And the first sentence on there, it says, in a world full of people who rejected God and walked according to their own lust and desires, Noah stood out. He was a breath of fresh air, and God noticed him. Certainly Noah's neighbors mocked him for his faith. Imagine spending 12 decades building a huge boat when it had never even rained before. No doubt his neighbors thought he was cracked, but he stayed true to God, and that was his witness to a dying world. Do you want to be a true nonconformist? Then walk with God. Don't go the way of the world. God noticed Noah's righteousness in the midst of this generation of unrighteousness, and he will do the same with you. And I can't agree with that anymore. We need people just walking with God on a daily basis. We don't need to go against it. Street preaching, don't rely on street preaching to get the message out. You can get the message out when you're in Walmart standing in line or at a dinner, friends or something. Just walk with God on a daily basis. Everyday decision. You'll stand out. Well, the results are, don't worry about it. You know, God's going to be with you. God's going to be with you through it, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. So, but that's what we need today. The media is going to throw how terrible things are. They're going to make it worse. And I don't like watching it at all. I'd rather go camping. Yes. and watch the news at all because they hyper-escalate everything. But we just need to be every day at work being a testimony for the Lord and just conversations, actions, the attitude. Okay. Now, let's say, look at my last paragraph. It says on the same page, in an effort to accommodate the Bible text to more modern views of science, some people have claimed the flood was local rather than universal. They insist that Noah was simply describing what he could observe from his limited vantage point. But the plain reading of the account clearly indicates that God was bringing a global judgment to bear. Good morning, Miss Lou. Hey, David. How are you this morning?
Oh.
Wow. Wow. Praise the Lord. Good. Well, look, we're on page 64. Just got to finish reading something. The last paragraph. In an effort to accommodate the Bible text to more modern views of science, some people have claimed the Bible was local rather than universally then. They insist that Noah was simply describing what he could observe from his vantage point. But the plain reading of the account clearly indicates that God was bringing a global judgment to bear. He promised to destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air. Nothing was local about that. Furthermore, if the flood was just local, then why did God give the universal sign of the rainbow as a sign of the covenant? Also, the Bible is specific and says that the ark landed on Mount Ararat in Turkey, almost 7,000 feet in elevation. Right off, when you tell me last week that satellites can see it? The more we get into technology, the more it proves the word of God
to the above the
okay, let's see. Okay, this handout that I got, we're gonna go over this, and it explains a lot of what is written here. It says here that the volume of the ark was 522 train cars. That's how much. You could put 522 train cars in the ark. So that's a pretty good size. Have y'all been up to the ark? Awesome, isn't it? Yes. Yes. Okay. So let's see. Let's go to the next page, page 66. There is even a great slab of sediment near Agate Springs, Nebraska, containing the bones of some 9,000 different animals apparently tossed together violently and buried by water and dirt. So, again, there's more proof of universal flood than there is of a local flood. Okay. Go to that second-to-last paragraph on that page. Now, the theology here is far more important than the geology. Every person, animal, and land plant on the earth perished, all because God judged sin. Many people today don't want to believe in a God who would judge the world for its sin. Now, why would that be? Because he loves us.
So, we don't get too vulnerable. So, in the day, all the time.
Right. Huh?
I wonder why.
Well, that's right, and that's the point they're saying is that many people today don't want to believe in a God that would judge the world for its sin. Because there's so much sin going on today, and God's not doing anything about it. And why is that? Right? There was God deals with us, mankind, his creation, in different ways at different times. Like Noah was 600 years when he started building an ark, or got in the ark. He got in the ark. So people don't live that long anymore. His economy, the world's economy, isn't the same as it was back then. Governments weren't the same as they were back then. And so God deals with people in different ways, or with his creation in different ways. My point is this, that we're under the age of grace, dispensation of grace. The way that God is dealing with Israel now is not the same way he dealt with Israel during the time of Moses. And because he, well, Abraham. Abraham he selected, and then through Abraham came the nation of Israel. And Israel was in Egypt, and they went into the promised land and lived there for a while, and God had to judge them. And so, but he used the nation of Israel, and they were the religious. They were the selected ones to worship him, and that he was their favored nation. They were his favored nation. And then they went bad. They worshipped other gods. Other gods of nations around them, they started incorporating into their culture. And God was a jealous God. He's not going to put up with it, but a jealous husband, jealous wife, put up with infidelity. So God dealt with Israel that way. And Israel had the commission to promote the gospel for the good news about a gracious God to the whole world. And somebody was saying, I'll use this example. I remember back in 1978, I worked at a machine shop in Virginia, and we had a lot of automated machinery. And they were from different companies in the United States, and one of the guys came in to set up one of these big, the CNC about. He says, well, you know, old Nixon's set up we're selling a lot of machinery to China. And I said, well, how stupid is that? You know, and he says, oh, well, we're not giving them anything automated. But, you know, they got to do it manual, you know, no computers. You know? And so, yeah, okay. And so that was in 1978. And then, and he told me a little bit about the Vikings. He would bring the kids to the nursery, and the nursery would take care of them all day while the women worked, and the men did the hard labor, the women did the easier labor. And then they would go back to their apartment, or whatever you want to call it, their commune, and they had communal kitchens. They didn't go back to put something in the microwave. They went to the communal kitchen and got their share of rice and whatever else, and they sat in the kitchen, and they went to their little apartment, and that was their life. This is back in, I don't think it's changed much since then. Maybe got fancier buildings. So what happened, I heard this guy say, he says, United States, their attempt was to make China like the United States. And what has happened, the United States is becoming like China. A lot of your people that are, let's say, influential because of their wealth that they made in the United States are complimenting China on their government and how their government allows this industry or the technology to build up and grow. And because, like Bill Gates got a lot of money in China, and he praises the government of China, and he's a little dictator himself, if you think about it. These guys are just dictators. But they like it because they don't have any competition. Now, you can't, in the United States, if Microsoft wanted to build a plant next door, they couldn't do it. Or they'd have a lot of problems to do it because they got zoning and we got our rights. You see what? But in China, they'll tell them, hey, pack your bags, you know. Go next door or go someplace else. We want this land. That's how it works in China. You don't have any rights. They track you. I met a guy at the welcome center. He came through. He was from Caucasian country, Lafayette, I think. And he had a couple of businesses over in China. And he says, you've got to put this app on your phone. And you've got to do all your business through that app. And that app,
the Chinese government knows where you are and what you're doing.
Hold on, he's been over there doing business. So, and I'm going back, this is my point. Israel did the same thing. They said, well, we'll take y'all in. We're big, you know, we're favorite of God. And boom, the nations around them proselyted them into their faith. And so we're finding that it happens all the time. Let's say the evil influences the, let's say, the righteous have easier or more than the righteous influence the evil when they're playing the evil according to the evil's rules. And that's what we found when Israel was trying to influence the nations. And you find it in the church today, where the church is trying to be like the world, use the world's music, use the world's, let's say, tools. I'm going to give you an example. I don't believe a woman should be a virgin. First Timothy. Have women pastors, and I mean it says over and over again in Timothy that the man is to lead the church. He's the spiritual leader. Yeah, thank you very much.
Right.
So be quiet. I'm picking on you. All right.
That's right.
There's more than that. You know, you could go into trying to make a big. Has tried to accommodate the world, and it's by doing that, it's failing. Now, my point is this, that we're living in the age of grace, not in the Old Testament. We're not living under the law, which Moses gave us. If you look at in the New Testament, the law was done away with Christ, and the law, as far as we're not concerned about holidays, we're not new moons, old moons, celebrations, festivals, and all of that, or our dress, or and all of these things. God tells us, don't commit fornication and don't eat anything that's been offered to idols. That's what it says.
Of course,
you know, to have a solid and moral culture and society,
you have the Ten Commandments,
and you go by those. That's common sense, so not too common. So that's the difference in the time periods, and this is the age of grace where God is pouring out his message of gospel to everybody and anybody, and will take in anybody that will believe. And wasn't that way in the Old Testament? Wasn't that way?
They were.
Is that what you asked me?
Yeah.
Right. There were converts.
Right.
They have, now, what I'm going, there are Jews all over the world. There have been Jews all over the world since,
when was the first?
And
they have found people with the Jewish faith, like in Korea, that have been there for thousands of years. And it's because of the scattering. And, yeah, they're believers. And I can, well, go up to Noah. Those that did get in the ark, they were gone. And I understand Peter's telling us that there's a certain place in hell that he's got them in chains, those that died in the flood. Certain place of hell. That's where Jesus went when he died, gave up the ghost on the cross. He went to there and preached to those guys in hell that were in chains, that were on the earth. Abraham, right. Well, look. Abraham said, he went up, Abraham had a conversation with the Lord and said, hey, if there was 10 righteous in Sodom, would you take them out? And Abraham, the Lord said, told you that when you said 50, you know? Said, yeah. And so the folks that stayed in Sodom were not believers. It's hard to think that Lot was a believer, but he was a believer. He was a believer. You might call him a backslidden believer, but he was a believer, and God took him out of because of that, before that judgment. And Sodom and Gomorrah was a big place. That place had been there for 450 years. They've been practicing that perversion for a long time. Going in, he's going to be an influence on the community and everything, and he ended up losing his sons, son-in-laws, his wife, and then his daughters committed incest with him. So Sodom and Gomorrah wasn't too good of an influence. So now, but this period of time that we live in is called the Age of Grace and the Church Age. Ever since Jesus ascended to heaven, it's a different period where grace is the main thing or influence that's going all over the world. God has, his grace is the most influence, I guess I'm using that word again, for everyone in the world, and so that they can hear the message of God, of Jesus, and then he will save them. Then once you get saved, you experience his mercy. Because I can tell you personally, I've done some wicked things after I believed in his grace that I did before. And his grace is phenomenal, but his mercy is outstanding. You know, I mean, I can't comprehend God's love. And I don't think you had that in the old days before Christ died and resurrected. It was Christianity that civilized the Mongolians. It was Christianity that civilized the Vikings once they started believing. The Vikings, all they did was go around to England and for a hobby killed people and pillaged. That's all they did. They were not farmers. They were murderers and invaders. Then they met the gospel. And gradually the gospel took over. And they became, some became Christians.
So that's what I'm saying. God's grace through Christ, the message of the gospel, is the power of this world today. And when the last person is saved, then God is going to pull us out. And then that's when the rapture is going to take place. And, you know, it's going to be a different place. And Thessalonians, Paul was really influencing those Thessalonians that don't be concerned. You're going to be taken out. We are not called to wrath. And we're going to be taken out. All of this is going to be coming down. Any comments? All right, let's read this real quick.
This week. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Many, many years ago, Martin Luther made a startling announcement. He said, "I am much afraid that our own universities may prove to be the very gate of hell." And I did.
Yep. Even though I've never been to any universities, but I just for things that I hear, I know that there's a lot of things going on that God doesn't like.
Right. Yeah, and that's what the faith. A lot of corruption, a lot of, yes. So I'm going to get off on that. I had a lady come in. The welcome center. She says, "Yeah, we're going to go to our daughter's 35 years old. She's highly educated, and she's going to have her coming out party." And I said, "She says, yeah, she's figured out what sex she is." I said, "Well, they're having a party about it. Goodness. Yeah, that's education. Anyhow, it's not all that." But a lot of universities and a lot of that stuff. Martin Luther said this about 500 years ago. Okay, now the flood, and I believe it's a universal flood, not a local flood. There are certain things that are phenomena in our natural world that I believe can only be explained by a flood. For instance, the existence of great inland seas that are in different continents of the world. China has them. India has them. We in America have them. Our great basin. The shoreline is apparent. It can be seen. It was at one time a vast saltwater inland sea that got there somehow. It is since receded. There's hardly anything left of what was there originally. You could probably give it the name Lake Bonneville because all that's left is a little body of water known as the Great Salt Lake and the Bonneville Salt Flat. But at one time, there's no vegetation, you know, and it is. Going away. It's evaporating. Big old houses that were by the shoreline or big buildings, water's way back, all evaporating. Got a lot to go, but it just like he says here, difficult to explain with that without a flood. The fossil record is difficult to explain without the universal flood. Massive forests have been compressed by the pounding of the pressure of water. That's pretty easily seen. Because there are water-laid layers of sediment forming coal, and coal is found all over the earth in every continent. Even though the North Pole and the South Pole, and the players and the fossils,
Now, is gasoline or oil,
that's a fossil fuel. So
how
is that made? The animals died. So it's animals that were compressed. And that's all over the place. Yep.
And human. You don't find any.
They got fossils of this fish and this.
Where's all the human?
Where's all the human remains? It must be that oil we're burning.
And they found in the bottom of that crate, a fossil of a man's hand in the same mud, in the same print that was found. And they had it in some York.
We was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but this, yeah, but I forgot about the Smithsonian.
This is in the
Smithsonian you're talking about. Okay.
You know what they say? When we went to the park to take that information, they
about, I think it was about 35 feet long of that print.
Footprints and
dinosaur prints, and they brought it to the Smithsonian. And that's all they tell you. They didn't tell you that they pulled it out. At least not in a display at the dinosaur park. They took it. Man, that is, man, yeah. Trying to twist the truth.
So y'all went there and didn't see it, huh?
You know, we went there one time when the kids were small, and I looked at those big dinosaurs, and I told my kids, I said, you know, I could make one of those. I could pick up some bones and get some wires and nuts and bolts and put it together and make it look like one of those too, you know? How you know? But,
yeah,
it's real. Yeah, it's real.
No. Yeah,
that's hard, hard, and that man is willfully ignorant. He's willfully ignorant, willfully sending himself to hell. Can't blame Jesus or the church or me or somebody else. No. Yeah, that was good. Thank you.
Let's see. We've got a couple minutes. There's a great sediment layer out in Nebraska. That's where I'm at. The Agate Springs, Nebraska, the houses over 9,000 animal remains, bones that have been pushed there by some enormous pressure, the pressure of water mixed with dirt and pushed these things to sediment. Then you have the strata layer. But in the fossil record, you have certain fossils that are out of order.
So you can find fossils embedded vertically through the point of the bone cell fat. Maybe they overbehave. That's a typical place present.
Over 270 nations or tribes, you have flood stories.
It's not just a biblical story. You have that record in virtually every part of the world. South America, different tribes, Indians, those who have originated from Australia all the way back to the Gilgamesh epic on the Babylonian flood epic, which is probably the most famous and the closest to the biblical narrative. But there are 270 plus records of the worldwide flood that went to the history and time. Now, I want to read this to you. 88% of those flood narratives say that there was a favored family that was spared. 20% say that the survival was by means of a boat. 95% say sole cause of this catastrophe. 57% say the survivors ended up on a mountain. Any of them use the form of Noah's name, like the Hawaiian legend about the Nuu. Many of these flood narratives speak of birds being sent out. Many of them speak about a rainbow. And many of them say that eight people were saved. So it's a point. That is in the history of this was such for all. And we had our simple ones to follow and sent out and keep it connected. But
wow. Willfully ignorant. Now,
I've never been.
The only place I heard about the flood was in church, in Bible, in Sunday school, or in church. When I went to high school, it was all millions of years. Try to do away with the truth. But yeah. Thanks, Ken. I'm glad you came.
And Debbie.
And everybody else. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll go to church, okay?
Services. Any comments? Any other comments?
You like to hear. I'm
interested
in all of it.
Some people got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, nobody wants to know, but somebody might have to go. You and I will sit here and talk, okay?
My wife was chaperone.
Oh, man. Father, I thank you so much for your grace and mercy and your love and your long-suffering and leaving a record in your word that we have so much faith, trust in, knowing
that there is no exaggeration
and stuff like that to live a fight, trust, confidence in you. Done for you. Especially Jesus Christ. Thank you so much for coming and willfully dying on the cross, resurrected dead. I have hope in you, resurrected Savior. Pray for the services to follow that be guided. Whatever needs are there, pray that that message. Yeah, that's, I think I,